Good evening, everybody. This is Chandradasa from the Buddhist Center Online at thebuddhistcenter.com with another of our special Buddhist Voices podcast editions from Aryaloka Buddhist Retreat Center in Newmarket, New Hampshire in the USA. And we're coming from the 2014 Triratna Buddhist Order North American convention. And we're back in the cricket room. You can hear the crickets in the background. It's our little Zen theme. It's actually just a special effect that we've got on the recording. And I'm here, delighted to be joined, as usual, with my colleague Manida.
Hello.
And today's special guest, or I should say guests, am I allowed to say venerable? Can I call you venerable?
Sure.
The venerable Surya Dhamma from Cambridge, Massachusetts, which you probably all know as Boston. And his amazing golden retriever guide dog, Finn, who is pretty much the hit of the convention so far. And we're going to interview Finn a bit later about what it is like to work with Surya Dhamma. But for now, we'll start with Surya Dhamma. Good evening, Surya Dhamma.
Good evening, and thank you for this invitation.
Oh,
much appreciated.
You're most welcome. And how are you?
I'm fine. I'm enjoying this retreat very much.
It is good,
very much. I'd have to say, the most enjoyable convention I've been on.
Me too.
What are some of the highlights for you?
Just the friendliness and the warmth and the comradeship. And the food is very good, too. It's nice to be out in the country. I spend so much time in the city.
Yeah. I was actually just thinking, we haven't done something we normally do or often do in these things, is a little recap for people of what, just to bring to life what being on a convention's like. So maybe we should do a little Surya Dhamma's recap of today.
You mean just today?
Or the whole thing, if you like.
Yeah.
Want to recap the whole thing?
Well, like I said, it's just wonderful to meet new people ordained that I haven't met before. They're younger. I didn't know them before they were ordained. And they have this vitality and this newness. It's just very pleasant to be around. And also old friends like, for example, Tiradam. I was so much looking forward to linking back up with him. I haven't seen him for so many years. He and I and Viradama as well went to India together back in 1994. It's 20 years ago. That's where we were ordained. And so it has that feature of reunion as well as union on this convention. So it's a very, very, very good experience.
That's great. You know, about 18 months ago, I was in India at an order convention in India, and I was walking to the front to record a talk, and an order member whose name I now can't remember, except he had the word Dhamma in his name, grabbed me and said, "You're Chandradasa, you're from America." And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I want you to say hello to Surya Dhamma Tiradama and Viradama, because he was ordained with you."
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, wow.
It could be Manidama, or, the names don't come to mind right now, but there were 15 of us.
That's right.
That were all Dhammas.
The Dhamma brothers.
Yes. Yeah, and we were so graciously hosted by the Indian order members. It was absolutely delightful. Yeah. Very generous.
Here we are 20 years later.
I know.
Back home.
It's scary how fast that 20 years has gone by, too. Amazing.
You must have seen a lot of changes over that 20 years.
Yes, I have. Changes all around, not only at Aryaloka, but the world in general. It's very different.
Yeah,
in many ways, very different.
So we were talking a little bit at dinner. And you were saying that your background is actually in psychology.
That was my major.
That was your
college,
major. Did that have a bearing on getting involved with the Dharma? Was it part of that journey?
Well, I think it probably did. Certainly that interest in the nature of mind. But what I found very early on is that Buddhism goes much deeper. And it has very reliable methods for accessing those depths. I was also minored in philosophy, and I remember Socrates talking about the motif that was written over the oracle at Delphi in the temple, which was "Know thyself." Forgotten the Greek for that, but it's "Know thyself" is the translation. And It occurred to me when I started practicing Buddhism that philosophy, although philosophy quotes that from Socrates, he's one of the first people we study, there's no method provided in philosophy for knowing thyself on a deeper and deeper level. Whereas I feel that Buddhism, not just Buddhism, but characteristically in Buddhism, there are methods for doing that. So my first exposure to Buddhist thought was when I was in graduate school. One of my roommates turned me on to Alan Watts' book called The Way of Zen and suggested I read it, which I did. And I found it very strange and impenetrable. But I, at the same time, I felt there was something in that I should look into. I was very impressed also with the Japanese poetry that he quotes in that. Anyway, I continued investigating through Watts, and in the 60s in Cambridge, I used to listen to this weekly broadcast on WBUR where they played talks, recorded talks by Alan Watts. And the more I listened to him, the more I felt that I was starting to understand what the Buddha taught. And so I looked into venues of Buddhist practice and found, after a couple of unsuccessful tryouts, found this facility only a few blocks from where I live, newly opened, called the Dharma Datu. And it was founded by a Tibetan Buddhist Lama named Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. And they rented a house with a large downstairs, which served as a shrine room. And they had open house on Wednesday nights, which I began to go to, and was introduced to meditation practice the first time. And one of the people that lived in the house had a collection of tapes of speakers on Buddhism. And I asked her if I could borrow some of her tapes. And she gave me maybe 10 or 12 audio cassettes. And half of them were of Trungpa Rinpoche and half of them were Sangha Rakshita. Actually, I felt more informed at that time by Sangha Rakshita than by Trungpa Rinpoche. But because I had no access to Sangha Rakshita at the time, there was no order presence in my area at all. In those days, this was very early 70s, I decided I'd go to a retreat that Trungpa Rinpoche was running up in Vermont at what was called then Tail of the Tiger. And it was this farmhouse way up north in Vermont. And I met him there. And I was very, very, very impressed by his presence. He had a It's hard to describe, but when he stepped into the room, the room was transformed. And I can't convey how the transformation felt, but it felt like it gave me tremendous confidence in what he spoke from the bench, as we used to say in my hometown. And afterward, people would line up and get acquainted with him. So this particular seminar that I went to was called the Mandala of the Five Buddha Families, which was very, very, very interesting. It was all Vajrayana Buddhism, which is very colorful and very wonderful, really. So anyway, at the time in my life, as I said in the early 70s, things were not going well for me in many spheres of life. I'd been married, divorced, felt like a failure that way. My work life was sort of in a shambles, my career, so to speak, in part because I was starting to lose my sight because of this inherited eye condition I have, which is a very slow deterioration of the sight. And I was finding it more and more difficult to do my job because it involved a good deal of paperwork. So it was a very depressing time in my life. And I spoke to him and I told him my situation. I said, I'm losing my sight. I'm very depressed. I said, what should I do? And his answer was very, very simple and very straightforward. He says, be with yourself. Mm. Be with yourself. And the second time I encountered him face to face like that, I brought up the same issue. And I said, I feel cursed. And he said, actually, it's a blessing. And I said, why? And he said, because it's very real. Because it's very real.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to understand what he meant by that. But now I know. Mm. I think I know. And what he meant was that it's more real than the thought of who you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
The ego, in other words, the imagined self you think you are. Anyway, that, to me, forged a close relationship with him. And I realized that I had met my spiritual teacher. And I took refuge with him. He gave me a refuge name, which was Servant of Buddha. He drew it out in beautiful calligraphy. And there was a whole ceremony. I was the only guy that wore a suit. Everybody else was dressed like a hippie. I wasn't into hippieism. Not at all. I wore a suit. I wore a beige suit. And so from then on, I did what he instructed in terms of what practices to follow, what study to do, and so forth. And I found myself getting more deeply involved in this, and particularly the meditation practice. We did a lot of sitting practice. He emphasized sitting very strongly. We used to sit all day Sunday from 9 in the morning till 9 at night every Sunday. And I would be sitting at least once a day. That's all I could really afford in time. I was working. So I'd sit an hour a day. And I found my life changing. I found my mind getting more clear. I found myself less depressed. I found myself being more gentle with myself as well as other people. And then in 1981, I applied to and went to seminary with him. And that was held in Alberta, Canada, in the Rocky Mountains, in a hotel in the mountains. And we spent 3 months in isolation there with him. There were about 300 of us. And he taught 2 weeks, and then there would be 2 weeks of just sitting, 14 hours a day. And then 2 weeks of talks in sitting in the daytime, various periods in the daytime, but the talks went through what in Tibetan Buddhism is called the three turnings, the basic teachings, the Mahayana teachings, and then in the Vajrayana teachings. So each of the months was devoted to one of those turnings, the Dhammachakra, as it's called. And at the end of the Vajrayana section, those that stayed with it, stayed with the retreat right to the end and participated in the practices and so forth, were given pointing out instruction, which is interesting, was mentioned this weekend. I don't know if it's exactly the same thing. But the pointing out instruction is done in Vajrayana Buddhism when you start the four foundation practices. And it's pointing out the nature of mind, which is what you're supposed to deepen your awareness of as you proceed through the various practices that you begin with after you finish the Nundro, it's called. The Nundro consists of 100,000 prostrations, 100,000 Vajrasattva mantra recitations, 100,000 mandala offerings, and 1,000,000 Guru Yoga recitations of the mantra. And I did that in 4 years. And then was initiated into the Vajrayogini mandala and took up the Vajrayogini sadhana, which allowed you to do all of the advanced practices, the energy practices, the dream yoga, the whole shebang. And
how did you, so much rich stuff there, I'm just thinking, you know, you find yourself in a hotel in the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah.
Still wearing your beige suit, maybe.
No, not at the...
With Chogyam Trungpa.
I brought it, though.
And Trungpa is such a big figure in the history of American Buddhism, yeah, and actually even Buddhism in the West generally.
Yeah.
And it's interesting watching you as you recall all that.
Yeah.
It's such a rich world.
Yeah, it is. It was and is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you move from that into what seems like quite a different thing? Because that whole Vajrayana mandala of practice is such a very particular, world of the Dharma.
Right.
How did you move from that into something else?
Well, I met Bhante I think it was 1990 or maybe 91. I'd been listening to his talks prior to that, what tapes I could get, and by then Manju Vajra and Punya and Vajradhaka had moved here, and I had some contact with them, and formed a friendship with Punya and with Manju Vajra, and they would allow me to listen to tapes that they had of Bhante, and I found it very, very helpful, actually, what he had to say.
Mm.
I didn't find it conflicting at all with the Vajrayana teachings, not at all. But Trungpa Rinpoche died in 87. His regent took over then, and I didn't like the way the whole scene was going. I didn't particularly find any inspiration in the regent. I didn't like the guy as I knew him. So I drifted away. And I did some teachings under Sogyal Rinpoche for a bit, and then Namkhai Norbu Rinpoche for a couple of years, three years, I think. And then I met Bhante at a book reading that he did. And I remember saying to him, you know, I've been practicing Vajrayana, sadhanas and so forth since the mid or early 70s. And I said, you know, I'm finding them very top-heavy with a lot of cultural baggage from Tibet. He said, yes, that's so true. It's just added on, added on and added on. It gets top heavy after a while. I was finding it getting to be very extremely liturgical because I couldn't hardly see to read.
Mm.
I found myself at a disadvantage in doing these long liturgies. A Vajrayogini feast and sadhana can take 8 hours.
Mm.
8 hours, pretty much nonstop. We'd have a break after 4 hours, but it was exhausting. And it was all recitation, mostly, anyway. So I found myself just having to kind of secondarily mouth along with that, but not really like everybody else is reading it. I felt kind of alienated. Mm. You know? And so more and more I found myself just doing basic shamatha vipassana practice, which actually Trungpa Rinpoche emphasized a lot, actually, quite a bit. And the transmission that he gave us at the end of seminary was called Tamil Gi Shepa, and it's pointing out the nature of mind, and that's what you can, so to speak, quote-unquote, flash in any situation you're in. In other words, to give up your preoccupation with thought or indulgence in thinking and just relax and let the spaciousness of mind manifest to your awareness. That's TGS. And you develop that capacity more and more as you practice in Mahamudra or Dzogchen, actually. So, as I said, I connected with Bhante at that book reading. And I felt a very, very nice connection with him, having read so many of his books and listened to so many of his talks on tape. So I started coming up here. And I remember the first time I came up here because it was very disappointing, I have to say. I was told that friendship was really, a big part of the scene up here. And I felt a lack in that area of spiritual friendship because I was not going over to the Dharma Datu very often in those days, hardly at all. And so I came up here for a weekend, and all the order members were here when I got here, but then all of a sudden they disappeared. And they were all gone to visit their girlfriends for the weekend.
No.
And I was here with just this guy, Mike, who was a friend of Buddhapalita's, who was a newcomer like me. And I'd never met him before. And so the two of us were just sitting here looking at each other. What are we going to do? Everybody else was visiting their girlfriend. So I thought, well, what the hell kind of spiritual friendship is this?
That's a good question. And we don't have time to answer it tonight, so...
Anyway, I kept coming up and eventually formed a friendship with, particularly with Manju Vajra, with Buddhapalita, with Vajramati, and with Punya.
Surimathi, it sounds like Trungpa was a very instrumental, foundational teacher for you, and especially the advice he gave you about, you know, be with yourself.
Working with my eyes.
And I was really moved having dinner with you the other night, how you talked about, even with your sight, not having your sight, there's beauty and aliveness that you experience in life.
Oh, absolutely. I can see a little, and I still enjoy mm-hmm. seeing light. So there's definitely, I love to sit in the sunlight. I never have to wear sunglasses because I don't get enough, you know, input from the sun to make that mm-hmm. necessary. But I love to sit in the sun and absorb the warmth of the sun. But I think other senses take a more active role mm-hmm. in your life, that mm-hmm. smell, hearing particularly. Mm-hmm. I've been a musician since I was 5 years old. So music is a very, very big part of my life, mm-hmm. both listening and playing.
What do you play?
Play classical guitar.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I used to play flamenco guitar. As well. Yeah, so that's a big part of my life. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, sure, and taste of food and voices. I'm very partial to the voice of the female of our species. I love to listen to women speak, no matter what they're saying. You know, I enjoy friendships. I have a lot of friends back home in Cambridge, which I very much enjoy. I read a lot. I read by downloading books on my digital reader.
Yeah.
And I have several sources of books, so I have no dearth of reading material at all. So I read a lot as well. I reserve time to read Dharma pretty much every day. And one thing, you don't have to be able to see to meditate.
Mm.
Yeah. And I do that a lot. I do that. I try to do it three times a day, three sessions a day, since I've been retired. And that's since 98.
Yeah.
But I don't always get to do that. But I usually get in 2 hours a day, two long sessions a day of sitting. And I'm not doing it to achieve a goal, I have to say, at this point. At the risk of bragging, I enjoy it for its own, for itself.
Mm. Yeah.
That's great.
I can see that. I've really enjoyed your positivity, your ease, friendliness, warmth.
Thank you.
It just strikes me listening to you. I mean, it's great just listening to that whole story about Trungpa and your kind of experience of coming into that sangha and working through there. It's all so rich, and it's evident listening to you actually talk about your life now that you've got but it sounds like a very contented,
it is
rich existence.
It's sweet. It's sweet.
Life is sweet.
I'm at a good point in my life.
Yeah.
I don't have any. I have a secure place to live. I own it. I have an income that is not a lot, but it's enough to live on decently. Mm-hmm. And I have time, which is so precious as you get older, to have time, free time. Mm-hmm. I have a very good friendship with Shravaniya, which I really appreciate. We're really good friends. We see each other quite regularly. So, it's a good time to be alive. And I've also come to realize that at least my suffering, and I assume this is true for others as well, I have to assume it. I suffer when I identify with my body or my mind. Mm. And what I mean by that is that I see my body as me. Me. I see my mind as me. When I fall into that, I suffer. Mm. When I'm not identified with my body or my mind, with my, you know, by me, by my thoughts, memories, my story, my life story, my images and so forth, mental images. When I don't identify with that, I feel free and I feel happy. And I think that I've learned that through Dharma practice, actually. Yeah. I don't say I don't still fall back into that lower identity habit. But when I'm free of that, I feel very open to my world and other people particularly. Mm. I can't be offended or abused or anything like that, insulted or anything like that. I just feel love for other people and appreciation of everybody I meet when I'm free of that fixation on self.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, we sure appreciate you coming to this convention.
Thank
it's been
you.
Really delightful having you around.
And Finn.
I now want. I'm not even a dog person, and I want a golden retriever. This is like I'm experiencing. Today
wonderful.
I was experiencing craving for a golden retriever.
Oh, they're just wonderful dogs. He's my first one all my dogs preceding him, I had three, were German Shepherds. And they were fantastic, too. Yeah. But there's something very special about the Golden Retriever.
Oh, he's a beautiful dog. And sorry we didn't have time to interview you, Finn. Oh. But my great thanks to Manida and to Suryadam, of course, for being our guest this evening, for telling us wonderful stories about your entry into the Dharma, your continuing path. And we'll be back, perhaps with the crickets, perhaps not, tomorrow evening, or with our last podcast, which will be a roundtable discussion about Sri Ratna in America, what it is to be an American Buddhist, and particularly an American Buddhist in our context. Uh-huh. And we're looking forward to that. But for now, good night.
Good night.
Good night.